By making sure everybody puts their cell phones on stun, please, and we'll call the January 2016 edition of the Little Calumet River to order. Let's please stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Lambert, please call roll.
Tom Wyszynski.
Here.
Tom Gosdecki.
Here.
Anthony Broadnax.
Here.
Ron McCarron, absent. Debbie Long.
Here.
Dave Castellanos.
Here.
LaVon Whitaker.
Present.
William Baker.
Here. Next item is the approval of minutes from December of 2015. Modifications, changes, motions, what say you?
Move we accept the minutes as submitted.
Second.
There's a motion and second. Any discussion? Be there none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All there to read. Next item is the chairman's report. I guess that's me. One of the things we always start is looking at the now yellowing pictures of some of the region's examples of what happens when a $275 million man-made flood control project falls by the wayside. Anything man-made is definitely something that needs continual operation and maintenance. So if you don't do what it was intended as it pertains to what the Corps put together, things like that happen. A lot of people in this room helped us resolve that. A lot of pictures are out there that didn't make the board. I think everybody that's here in or experienced that doesn't ever want to experience that again. However, let's keep in mind that this is Mother Nature we're talking about. If you get 10 gallons of water for your 5-gallon bucket, there's going to be some issues. What we can say is that we're far better prepared than we were in September 2008 to work as a community to make sure something like that doesn't have the devastating effects that it did in September. And every time we look at these pictures, it's got to take you back to a place. And I think wherever you're from in the region, whether you were in Munster or Hobart or Gary or any of the places that saw that are stuck on the Borman, we don't want to make sure that we do everything that we possibly can before it rains 10 inches, that we know what's going to happen, where people are going to go, and utilize the resources to the best of our ability. That said, one of the things that's a benefit from the project are all the people that worked on it since the flood is over 1,400 parcels came out of the mandatory requirement of federal flood insurance that put over $4 million annually back into the community. That's economic development as far as where I'm coming from. So that being said, we continue to work. The premise that we've always had is the strategic plan, even before we had any money, was to work with all the communities together. It's a partnership, to do the one thing that we struggle at here in the region, that's work together, to make sure something like that doesn't happen again. It's single focus. So, get a little worked up about that. So that being said, we continue to try to work with that. Interlocal agreements with the municipalities, not to create another level of government, to try to be lean and mean with people that do this for a living, have experience in the private sector, to be able to help the community move forward. So enough of the soapbox. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Next up is the finance report. Let's pay the bills. Mr. Repay.
Sorry, Robert's rules.
Schlinski, make a motion on the claim hours, please.
We have claims the amount of $137,202.79. Make a motion that we go ahead and approve these.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second to pay the bills, Mr. Repay.
Okay, for the January claims, you'll see a lot of it is for end-of-the-year issues, whether it's mileage, web hosting, our gas, electric, copier lease. The big stuff is the ribbon parcel mapping, which we'll see a demonstration for later on this evening. And that is we have thousands of properties that we either own outright. We have flow easements on. So we directed Garcia Engineering to go through all the parcels, document them, map them on GIS, and then scan the documents into that map so that we properly identify the ones we own, and if we don't own them through some lapse prior to us, then we can acquire them and we can do so without legal ramifications. So right now we've identified 40 of them between us and our partners, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and hopefully that number does not rise. A couple other items, Hasse Construction for our sandbar modification, which is the project that is just off of Kennedy Avenue on the west side, straightening out the channel, that's for $23,000. Dawson Associates, who have helped us get through the crediting challenge that we've had and work through it, and we have positive news on that, where we are now in the positive as far as a cash balance with our partner, the Army Corps of Engineers, to the tune of $200,000+, which is a good thing. We've been negative for a few years now, and Natalie will probably correct me how many years exactly, but it's been a few. So now what that allows us to do is work towards finishing this project. Mm-hmm. Two items on our 1 and 1A list is the Hobart mitigation for this project, as well as the state line project, which will help hopefully conclude the remaining, I think, 20 plus structures that still have to pay the mandatory flood insurance program. So with that being said, we do have a payment of $690 for beaver trapping, and we have something in the room here that will slowly try to demonstrate what we have out there. The specimen here is a 60-pound beaver that's 52 and a half inches long. This one particularly blocked up Georgia Avenue in Gary, that it was impassable, and unfortunately, he's now going to be a traveling piece for educational purposes. So maybe Cabela's wants to borrow it from us. I've already taken it to a couple locations. It is pretty heavy to carry. Jody's helped me get it out the door, but it's definitely interesting looks when I'm loading it into the back of my car. So with that, I'll take any questions.
All right, any questions for Mr. Repay and the bills, which total $137,202.79. What say you?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
One of the questions I had was, Mr. Repay made note of the fact that if we didn't own them, we'll acquire them. You said it was approximately 40 that we do not own?
There's about 40 that between us and the Army Corps, we agree that we don't have the documentation and they don't have the documentation as far as crediting is concerned. So they don't have it, as well as that we've shown them that we've owned it. So now we're going through that process with our attorney, Mr. Wickland, and set the stage to go get them appraised, make offers. Hopefully they accept. Otherwise, it'll be condemnation.
Okay.
Most of these are all, I'll just say not most of them, 99% of them, because I know one of them isn't, are flowage easements. So it's just land out in the middle of a field that most of them have back taxes on. So
okay.
I shouldn't say that too much. Yes.
All right. That suffices. Thank you.
Anyone else? There's a motion and a second. Mrs. Lambert?
Tom Wilczynski?
Yes.
Tom Gosdecki?
Yes.
Anthony Broadnax?
Yes.
Debbie Long?
Yes.
Dave Castellanos?
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker?
Yes.
William Baker?
Yes. Next up on the agenda is the Executive Director's Report. I thought we were going to start with our, you know, prop, but I guess that we have already got that taken care of.
Well, we can have a contest of what you like to name it. That will be what we can start with. So whatever you want, it's 60 pounds, and it's caught off George Avenue in Gary. So with that, I'll take all nominations. As far as project, we're working on right now is building, and what you'll see under item 9 is all the projects that we're sort of set in place to work on for 2016. Typically, December is a slow month. Unfortunately, it decided to snow, sleet, rain, whatever it was doing on those couple days in the end of December.
How much did we get rain-wise?
I think it was 2.5 inches over a 3-day period. Of course, I picked that time to be out of town, so I didn't get to fully experience it, although I get to monitor our monitors that we have on our website to watch how high it would go. I know I'll pick on Hobart because they're here. I think at the dam it was, 2,000 cubic feet per second, which was causing some small issues at the confluence in Gary as Deep River and Little Cal met. So I know that caused issues with WLTH, but there was a lot of water precipitation in a short period of time in that area. So. So under item 9, you will see the different things that we're working on, both towards passing our inspection that are coming up in May. Our inspections already start in May. And some of the things that we're working on to sort of do as it relates to making the project better. In some cases where the road was too low or it requires some cities and towns to put the sandbags down. We've talked about it. You know, 33,000 sandbags for one city is a little bit much. So we're trying to improve some of those areas to make it safer, to make it less human intervention. And then follow that in item 9, we're going to have two presentations by two communities from the watershed requesting what they think is important to them and how it would help them and their community reduce flooding risk in their town or city. So that's what you see, and you know we have 6 on the agenda tonight. I would tell you that we would probably have the same number coming February on other projects that are in the pipeline. That's not including anything that regarding watershed applications.
So aside from carrying over the Kennedy Avenue sandbar, are there any other 15 projects that are rolling into 16?
That's the only one, unless you want to consider the takeover of the pump station at Bird Street. But for as far as what we awarded and was trying to be constructed, that is the only one that we have that didn't get finished in calendar year 15.
And just to build on that real quick is, we've only had money for how long now, Dan?
3 years.
3 years. So we were trying to work through decades of neglect for a lot of segments of this flood control project, to which think about it as the drain. Everything in the watershed drains to this particular river. So there was some segments towards the east part of the project that weren't even inspected by the Army Corps of Engineers because there had been no maintenance, to the point where we are still trying to catch up with the deferred maintenance and keep up with the things that were supposed to be done for those decades prior to the perpetual funding source. So we're getting there. But let's all remember the perspective here and what happened and the things that needed to be done to get to where we are today. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Are you done, Dan?
I'm done.
All right. Any other questions then from the board to Mr. Repay as it pertains to what's going on in the field? Giddy up. All right. Be there none. Next item on the agenda is other issues, new business.
Mr. Chairman, I know we have a lot of projects this year, so get the ball rolling with the first one. I'd like to make a motion to authorize our executive director to seek proposals for flood wall joint sealant replacement and repair for levee segment 5.2.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And there's a second. Discussion. Mr. Repay.
This item will address what has come up on the inspection report now for the last 2 years. The sealant between the joints on the flood wall are starting to fail. We are going to address it before it gets any more serious and the water gets behind the wall and starts to affect the actual sheet pile. So this would hopefully address, well, this will affect this and also will give us a positive outcome on our inspection. It's mainly on Hawthorne. So if you're familiar with the streets, it's on Hawthorne from Ridge Road going around the corner to the little pump station off of...
So right before the flood in 2008, that was what was just getting finished.
Correct.
So this is called an 07 completion, and it's failing already. Is it safe to assume that the other locations within the system have the same type of lifespan pertaining to this particular flood wall joint sealant?
We addressed them already in the Gary segments, and they're still holding up. So that was 3 years. I mean, I don't have much of a.
Right. But they're inspected each year by
correct.
The Corps.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Do we know what type of sealant was used and how long? What is the longevity of this stuff, supposedly?
I don't have it on hand, but I could get you the spec on what it was.
Be interested in seeing that.
Yeah, because that was a different contractor on that segment than the other segments that have the wall, correct?
There were two different contractors in 5-2 and 7. 5-2 was Dyer, 7 was Ceres.
Oh, I forgot about those guys.
I will get you the
You'll
warranty
pick that scab
number.
For me? Thanks. Okay, there's any other questions with regards to the motion? There none. Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Wyszynski.
Yes.
Tom Gazdecki.
Yes.
Anthony Broadnax.
Yes.
Debbie Long.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. Let's go. Obviously, that's weather permitting and, proposals.
I'd like to make a motion to authorize Executive Director to seek proposals on culvert cleaning and inspection in Hammond, Highland, Munster, and Indup.
There's a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
Sorry.
And a second, Mr. Repay.
So as also part of inspections, we must inspect the culverts every 5 years, videotape them, clean them, make sure they're greased properly. We've done that already in Gary as a part of the maintenance program that we put there. We just did Griffith, the deep tunnel project, which runs parallel or actually underneath Arbogast from Katie Marsh Ditch to the river, and we did that in November. This would finish them off. We are the project extended itself a little bit to the east at the I-65-94 interchange, and as part of that we have to videotape and clean those culverts out in that area. There are 5 of them in that area. And then Hammond, Highland, and Munster are all a part of 5-2, Stage 7, and Stage 8. So we'll address those. Actually, we're addressing, I think, Hammond a year early, but it's probably better. We're going to get a better price and just do it. And we'll also know when going forward that we'll just have it on our chain of events that next 5 years that needs to be done. So as you remember last year that we ran into, when we did these, we did find some interesting discoveries off of Georgia Street in Gary where the flowable fill, someone poured in throughout the entire thing.
The lava flow.
The culvert that ran underneath 94 where one of those gaskets were failing and we were able to fix it. So that's the whole point of doing this, get it before it gets be in a bad situation.
Big fan of preventative maintenance. Just to humor me, where is the culvert in section 7 or 8 that would require this type of PM work?
Your mosquito holding area would be 1 and 7. 8 would be, I do that just because I like to see your reaction. In 8, Riverside Park.
The West Nile nest?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Riverside Park and 8 would be another place. 5-2, there's that culvert that runs right by Wicker Park as you go up by the pedestrian bridge.
Got it. Any other questions or comments with regards to this motion and second? Either none, Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Wyszynski.
Yes.
Tom Gazdecki.
Yes.
Anthony Broadnax.
Yes.
Debbie Long.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. All right. Let's make Repay busy.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to follow up on previous discussions regarding the paving of the levees on top of them. I'd like to make a motion to authorize the Executive Director to advertise and solicit bids to pave sections of the tops of the levees.
Second.
Motion and a second. Mr. Repay.
This project originally started as flood protection, but also it's a recreational project. This is twofold help here. One, when the tops of the levees are paved, my vehicle doesn't sink into them, neither does any of the maintenance vehicles. Two, it provides a recreational component. Two important pieces, the Libel Avenue ramp that goes up by the Rookery, which is located just to the west side of Klein Avenue. There'll be a trailhead there put in so that it'll tie into Highlands Bike Trail. Currently, right now, it's just a beat-up path of, you know, people just riding their bike over it and strollers trying to make it up a steep hill. We're going to make it better, and then we're going to pave that area. So it's seen quite a bit of use from vehicles, and it's subject to a lot of rutting, which we get issues with on our inspection report. The second component is tying in the Lyman Avenue bike trail, the Lyman Avenue to Manor. We did that in cooperation with the town of Munster and the city of Hammond. Was it 2 years ago or 1 year ago? Where they took out the railroad trestle. It helped us because of flow through there. We didn't have any as many blockages, and the city of Hammond Munster put in that pedestrian bridge. So what this will do is this will tie in that bridge to the rest of the trail system as you work to the east. So that will be run from Kennedy Avenue to Lyman. It will run behind the church, behind the botanical gardens, and behind the Jackson Street pump station to where it terminates into Lyman. It does not go any further west of Lyman, so Ruth, you don't have to worry.
This hits a couple of things, because when this was first put together back in the 80s, it was also a recreational component. So this kind of hits that buzzword. Also, there's no real way to get equipment to some of these places. So we're also going to utilize this component to be able to get equipment, to be able to, you know, address people like Cal there and, you know, get down to some of the snags that are happening in the wild components of this project, which there's more than you would think. Those are just the two locations. Is there an opportunity as a part of this to look at maybe having a place to drop canoes, access into the river?
We would need a permit for that. However, we
need a permit just to have a meeting.
I understand. Bills for the private sector. No, we are starting to build as a part of, like, for instance, the high-velocity channel flow. We have an entrance at that point. That area will have not only a recreational trail, but also to put a canoe in for recreation and or our maintenance, because it will be upstream from a pinch point that we know, which is Indianapolis Boulevard, sometimes causes us trouble. So it will help us in that regard. Those are just the two high parts with Libel and Manor Lyman Avenue, but there are other areas. For instance, right by Oxbow Park, this will also be taken care of as well, which will run through the nature trail. Also by the Visitors Convention Bureau from the pedestrian bridge by the railroad, with the Indian Harbor Railroad tracks, all the way to Kennedy. So it's you
know, we've had a lot of conversations over the years about trying to, you know, have some places to put the equipment in, and also from a recreational component. So any chance that there's a way to be efficient with some of this stuff, please.
Right. And the Sandbar project has a built-in access point as well that we're going to put in. So that's just a part of the project. So anytime that we sort of get into the project, we try to add a access road into it.
Yes, sir. Anything else for Mr. Repay on that one? Either not, Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Wyszlinski.
Yes.
Tom Gazdecki.
Yes.
Anthony Broadnax.
Yes.
Debbie Long.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. And moving right along.
Next motion is in Gary. There is a section in Gary just south of the Georgia Street Bridge that is being proposed to be raised to meet the 100-year floodplain as well. In the event of a 100-year rain event. And that area is approximately 33rd in Georgia, and it would raise it from 33rd Avenue to approximately just at the entrance of the bridge as it goes over the highway approaching the north. And there's a motion to put forth a motion to authorize the executive director to advertise and solicit bids for the Georgia Street project.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Mr. Repay.
This is just an example. We've talked in the past about removing human intervention to in this project to control the floods or the high water. In that case, 100-year is designed to flood over the road on Georgia Street between the approach over the 94 Expressway.
All I'm sorry, say that again.
Did I speak in?
Yeah, it's designed to flood the roadway.
Yeah, in certain areas of this project, certain roads are designed to flood. I could go from east to west. We've corrected a couple of them. For instance, Northcott is should be corrected. That was designed to overtop. Columbia Avenue was designed to overtop. That has been corrected. Technically, Cayman Avenue is designed to overtop. That's why we have a closure there, but it's only at the worst-case scenario. If you go further into Griffith, the Cayman Township, Calhoun, Colfax are all designed to overtop, which means that road will not be passable during a flood event. I should have actually gone back. Kennedy Avenue, which we will address here in the future, is designed to overtop. That's why Highland and Hammond have to provide intervention there so that that doesn't flood their developments on either side, their houses or their businesses. Georgia is that last example. So is Chase. So is Clark. So these are all designed to flood at some point during a large rain event. Georgia was the one that we chose first because it was probably the easiest for us to do. And what we're going to do is simply raise it about a foot and a half, which is all it really takes. It will save us about 2,000 sandbags from doing it, from deploying it. It will not prevent the road from being flooded because it's probably about 1,500 feet between places where it's going to flood, and then that becomes entirely cost ineffective. So we will take advantage of the areas that we can to prevent and promote traffic. In some areas, it just is what it is, and we can't stop it. I mean, Harrison Avenue is going to be another one that is designed to overtop. So you see all the intersections that we're dealing with. And so when you have the opportunity to say, for instance, like Kennedy or Broadway or a Grant, where it's just a slight rise over a short period of time, you try to take advantage of that.
And that was on purpose, so some of you here in the audience can kind of see what kind of hand we were dealt. So that, I don't think, really makes sense for somebody who lives in those areas, but it might make sense when you sit in a conference room and design this thing in the 80s. But we strategically try to go through and address as many as we can, because what would happen if it rains again, like what we saw in September of 2008? Dan, how many sandbags are we supposed to have to throw across the system if we have one of those types of events again?
It's down to 40. It used to be 60,000.
40,000. And it used to be what?
It used to be 60.
So we've been trying to work through and chisel that down, because you can only imagine, even though we can say all kind of great things, what it's going to be like with those types of events if we had something like that with 10 inches of rain, and trying to get that many people and that many materials to that many different locations across the region. Anyway, sorry, get off the soapbox again. So anything else on that one?
Not on Georgia. And we have the permit and we're ready to go on it. So as soon as the weather breaks, we'd be able to move.
Any other questions for Mr. Repat on this one?
Mr. Chairman, quick question.
Yes, sir.
What is the north limit again? How close are we getting to 94?
The north limit on Georgia is the actual approach,
which is
actually approach on Georgia. So where the three culverts run underneath is the approach.
Okay. And we're square with NDOT if we need to be or whatever.
Right. Okay. We coordinate with NDOT. We coordinate with NDOT and everything. Matter of fact, we're coordinating with NDOT with some easements that we need to get from them as a part of this project. That.
Any other questions for Mr. Repat on this? Either not, Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Wyszynski.
Yes.
Tom Gazdecki.
Yes.
Anthony Broadnax.
Yes.
Debbie Long.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. Giddy up.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to authorize the Executive Director to enter into agreement with Garcia Consulting Engineers to design the work of the 35th and Chase Road crossing in an amount not to exceed $67,000.
Second. There's a motion and a second. Mr. Repay.
So, once again, this is human intervention. In this area, particularly, Chase Street is designed to flood from the river all the way back to the railroad tracks, which is probably half mile, three-quarters of a mile, I would guess. It's a tricky intersection because NIPSCO has their generation station back in that area, and that's built up high enough, thankfully, that that won't be affected. However, in this particular intersection, it is designed to have basically post and panels. So you put the posts in, you slide basically a foot and a half panel in, lock it in with clamps, and you keep going. It is not easy, time-consuming, and realistically, we've practiced it, and it will work, but under emergency circumstances, it will be difficult to get as many people as we would probably like to have there to do it. You're dealing with 5-gallon buckets full of pins and clips. It's something that we think that we can achieve by just building that intersection up. And we call it the up and over. It's pretty logical. This area protects several things. It protects the new 911 tower that we agreed with the Lake County to put up, the Lake County solid waste leaf compost pile, the police and fire training facility for the city of Gary, the Gary Transportation Authority, as well as a couple private businesses, ARCs there, as well as the Northwest Indiana Food Bank. So if this panel doesn't get up, all those places that I have just mentioned will likely see bad things happen to them.
I'm against that.
And that's...
Isn't this also the location we had some problems with those materials not being around? Or is that another location?
It was... A few years back, it was not possible to put up. There wasn't enough people to put it up with the material that they needed to put up.
And for them. Any other questions for Mr. Repay on this one?
Mr. Repay, can you give us a general idea once again on the exact location at 35th and Chase in terms of what direction with the up and over? Generally speaking, sure. I know these guys are sort of in the exploratory design stages.
Yeah, so as you're approaching from the east, Chase Street, you're about 1,000 feet, 1,200 feet out, you'll start seeing it approaching to rise with the way we, in theory, are trying to design this. And then as it approaches the wall, because I probably, in the perfect world, I should have brought the picture that I had. There's two levees on either side. There's a levee to the right that shoots and goes north, and there's a levee that goes directly south that ties into high ground, which is the railroad tracks at that location. Once again, this isn't going to solve transportation issues because, one, Chase Street will be flooded by design. That's just what it is. Two, Chase Street currently right now is impassable because of the condition.
But that's north of 35th, correct?
It's north of 35th, but everything from 35th south and north will be flooded. It's basically a holding area for water. So what this does is it prevents a very complicated closure from being ignored or not. I don't want to say messed up, but it's not easy. It's not something that you want to necessarily mess around with when it's raining, dark, and you're trying to find a clip in trying to put it together. So if we remove that, then that will allow the folks in Gary to concentrate on the areas that are easier to do and not have to worry about, you know, their police, fire, and training to be underwater and or the 911 tower that was just put up. So,
any other questions for Mr. Repan this one? Either or none, Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Wyszynski.
Yes.
Tom Gosdecki.
Yes.
Anthony Broadnax.
Yes.
Debbie Long.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. Moving right along.
So, I guess with that is, you do have one more, don't you?
We have one more.
I'll be quiet.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to authorize the Executive Director to enter into an agreement with SEH Indiana for an amount not to exceed $48,200 to investigate opportunities to improve hydraulic restrictions of Deep River under the CFE Railroad and Hobart. Don't ask me to repeat it.
Yes, sir. There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Mr. Repay.
When we...
railroads. Let's bring those guys in.
That we might as well. We got beavers. We got railroads. It's all the same. When we did, or when we authorized the Deep River study, is what we call it, and we were presented that study in a very timely manner in June when the Blackhawks were about to clinch, I think, the championship. Part of that discussion revolved around what we thought would be the solution to the problems in that area, and some were not proven to be accurate. So one of those items that we needed to look further at, as the study indicated, was this railroad track, currently a railroad crossing. Currently there are two culverts, arch culverts in that area, that slows down or impedes the flow of water. We need to be sensitive to the folks downstream to make sure that we don't put too much water on them. We also need to be sensitive to the Little Calumet River, because at the confluence we can't have it back up too fast on the folks there. So this study will look at opportunities, ideas, thoughts on how we can address that and how we can get the water conveyed through there easier or better. And
or efficiently.
Or efficiently. Sorry. I didn't go to IU. I went to Ball State. We didn't teach that.
We digress.
I know. It's a long day. So this will help us identify possibly those ideas. And, you know, this is their presentation. This was brought up at that June meeting. And then you'll hear the city of Hobart present on the other ideas that they have to address. This would help, I think, 3 to 4 feet in different head elevation, if I remember correctly.
And just to try to give you a visual, and I'm sure the guys from Hobart could help with this, but, you know, there's a railroad crossing over one of the rivers and over the Deep River there, and there's two culverts, which are big pipes, and that lets the water flow north towards the Little Cow. What they're going to look at is the possibility of having room on either side to put in another culvert and see if that might help with some of the challenges that are happening over in that part of the watershed. So hopefully I did that justice. But any questions for Mr. Repay on that one? Indeed or none, this is whenever. Let's go.
Tom Wyszlinski?
Yes.
Tom Gazdecki?
Yes.
Anthony Broadnax?
Yes.
Debbie Long?
Yes.
Dave Castellanos?
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker?
Yes.
William Baker?
Yes. All right, Mr. Repay, we're being efficient as usual.
The next item on our agenda is still going to be under a new business. However, what we're going to do is we have three presenters. One is Jeff Yatsko from Garcia, who's going to just give you a brief overview on the ribbon mapping that they've undertaken and completed, or at least 99% completed, while we still true out some items. And then that will be followed by the city of Hobart presenting their application. You guys have all received their application. Their application has been in for a couple months now, and then they're going to present as well, and if you have questions, feel free to ask them. And then, not last, but not least, it would be the town of Winfield. They have a application as well, and same story. They're going to give you a brief synopsis. You've read the application, and questions ensue, and then that's it. So I get to stop talking for a little while.
I'm going to ask you to explain real quick about what the watershed is and how we got involved in that.
Really?
Yeah, quickly.
Oh, yeah. So, should I start from the legislative process? Well, yeah. You don't want
overlapping taxing jurisdictions.
Yeah, no. So as we initially started as a commission, we were only had jurisdiction on 1 mile on either way of it, and so through legislation, they decided everybody that puts water into the watershed or is in the watershed, contributes to the watershed, and then part of our charge will be to correct some of the issues that are within the watershed. They may not be directly related to Little Cal, but they may be, and so for instance, these two cases here, Hobart, where there is no regulated drain, So all the issues, all the problems, all the maintenance falls on them. So there is no money coming from the drainage fund, which I know makes you really excited. Whereas other communities have regulated drains in them. You know, for our instance, their deep river is our heart's ditch, whether it's not a regulated drain, and the communities of Highland and Dyer and Munster have to maintain it. So in the theory, and I'm speaking sort of for the legislators here, was that we could go and sort of help where it met the criteria to help some of these communities out after we took care of the maintenance issues to address some of their issues as well that caused some of their businesses or residents to have undue flooding. And you know, now that we sort of are getting a handle on not only our maintenance issues, we still got some more to go, but we're also, you know, when we still have to complete some of our aspects of our project, like the mitigation and state line and some others, we are starting to now look at some of those projects and we'll be able to address some of them. So that's why they're here. And, you know, we're learning as we go through this process. It's not perfect. And we're just, you know, they ask me what I should expect. And I look at you guys and I say, Lord only knows. So I just let them go and I try to be or prepare them as best I can. But if you remember the first time I did this, and I forget for which town it was, I try to do the presentation for them. It's really difficult for me to do it justice because they have far more knowledge of their project than I do.
And that was well said. One of the things that's happened is all the communities that are in the watershed have an appointment to an advisory board. And the advisory board, theoretically, is supposed to look at all the watershed projects that are being submitted, prioritize them as a group to make a recommendation to the board. So sounds good in theory. It's evolving as far as how this works through it. So, you know, it's something new, but we're going to try to keep pushing forward because, let's face it, our water flows into the river and the watershed. So we need to make sure that, you know, we all are looking at a lot of issues and try to be a little proactive and try to look at some of these things that are flood control because the, you know, state statute is a flood control project. So we want to try to make sure we always focus on that and try to make sure these things kind of all tie together and have that continuity throughout the system. Again, it sounds good. It's, you know, an ongoing process. So that's it. Let's go, Mr. Repay. Who's first?
Jeff, you're picked on first.
Jeff,
I'm gonna
come up to the podium.
He's at work from the computer, I think.
I know, but he needs to state who he is and what he's doing and all that good stuff for the man. Because there's this Robert guy, he makes the rules, I understand.
Good evening, I'm Jeff Yatsko, for those of you that don't know me, with Garcia Consulting. We were given the task to take all the DC parcels that were done over the years, and a lot of these date back to the early 90s.
DC, what's that?
District Commission. Number?
This is what the parcels of real estate are called in this governmental project.
Right, and every parcel when the levee was built had to have some kind of easement and or it had to be taken in fee. So that was all completed prior to the levees being completed. The problem is that at the time they were all just filed back into the paper folders, put in file cabinets, put in plastic boxes, and put in the warehouse in Munster. So there was no way to really know. You know, now that you've got the project that's nearly complete, there was no way to know where you had easements, where you had land and fee, without trying to dig up a number, if there was even an index map, and then trying to figure out where those easements were. So we went through, we took all the plastic boxes, we went through all the file cabinets. To date, we've gone through about 850 parcels. We found the easement that was recorded. And we've made an interactive map for the whole system that I just kind of wanted to briefly go through tonight. I will send Dan the link so that you can also poke through from home. We offer, you know, we love suggestions, things that maybe, you know, any comments you have. But like I said, I'll kind of briefly go through it, show you what we've got, and give you the opportunity to comment.
And the only, and well, it's sort of going to be sort of out of the bag here, but we don't want to necessarily put it out to the public yet because some of these properties are still out there, and so if someone was wise, they'd go try to go get it.
So all, everybody that's in the public, it's really not for them.
So I know who's all here at this meeting, so if any of you guys all of a sudden own some of these, we're going to have a problem.
We're just going to assume whether or not the technology works. That's...
I'm not involved, so it's okay. You need help with that.
I don't think pickle oil warm up.
Did it wear out?
Not fair enough.
I hope so. I just opened the slide.
There we go.
All right, so in the meantime, we'll do hand puppets. Yeah. And there it is. It's slowly getting there. Oh, you know what? It's out of focus. Yeah? Probably need to slide up or back. Up.
Go closer.
I think you want to go this way. It's all my technological spines right there.
We're cut off a little bit, so I'm just going to slide this over. The first thing that we did was we took all the parcels in Lake County, and we were able to put them on a map. We can have aerials in the background. We're still kind of going through a beta process for aerials. But we've got several sections of the system, as you can see. It kind of goes off the screen there.
That's
but
the biggest problem.
All of the entire system's in there. Let me just kind of zoom in on a couple, and I can show you how everything works. The red lines are really the levels of protection. So that's where your levees and or eye walls are. And as you can see, there
were
several...
That's where we are, Jeff, in this map.
Where are we?
It's Columbia.
We are...
Between Columbia and Calumet, I imagine. Mm-hmm. That's
yeah,
got to be Calumet.
This is Columbia Avenue right here, where my hand is.
So that's Riverside Park there.
Right. This is Riverside Park right here. I apologize. But you can see, as you zoom in, you can see all of the DC numbers. That's what all the numbers represent. Those are all the DC numbers that for each parcel where an easement was taken. Again, there's two different things that happened. Either you took an easement or you took a piece of land in fee. So anywhere that you see something hatched in green, for example, 1247, I can do an inquiry on that. I can click on 1247. If I click on the document, it's going to show me the actual recorded document that was done.
Outstanding.
That is fantastic.
And you can see here's the easement that was actually completed. DLZ did this segment. So it's got their... Anything that was recorded for that parcel is in there. So that... And again, that goes for the entire segment. Anything that we found that may be an error... And again, what we're doing at the same time is we're checking the records that we see in the cabinets... and compare them to what the auditor shows as well. So, for instance, in red right here is the Optimus baseball fields. All right, the Lake County auditor shows that Little Kell River Basin owns that parcel. We know that's incorrect. So we made it red because we know we need to come back and fix that. And it's probably just a deed that we need to go find, and they probably have it incorrect. And we go through these. As we find them, we call the auditor, and as long as I have a deed that can prove it, they fix them. So they kind of go through and do that at the same time. Let me zoom out to another area near, let's try Burr Street. As you can see in the Gary segment, the levees get much wider. And so when it came to the Gary segment, again, like Dan was talking about earlier, there's a lot of flowage area. So while you may not have taken the land in fee, there's all kinds of parcels that were taken as a flowage easement. So we went through, found every single one of these parcels, and you can see they all have DC numbers attached to them. We can click on it. Again, we've got the record document. We bring it up. And so in this case, this was actually in fee. If it's hatched, it's an easement. If it's solid, that means Little Cal actually owns it in fee. So we've tried to have every single deed that was part of the system scanned in and in here. And again, we found some areas, and we're working on them currently. We found some areas that have some issues. For instance, there's a parcel right here that's red. So either we can't find the document, or maybe it was just out of order in the cabinet. So, you know, we're working through those issues to try to resolve those. There are some that Dan spoke about earlier, the 40 parcels. There are some that, for whatever reason, never got an easement over them. So we've also indicated that, you know, that if it's red... we know that there's an issue, and that's what we're trying to resolve. I think that's, you know, I think it would be best. Like I said, I will send Dan the link. I know he's had an opportunity to kind of look at it, but I'll make sure he gets it out to everyone. So you can also take a look. And like I said earlier, you can, if you don't exactly know where you are in the levee, you can turn on an aerial image in the background instead. I can actually reduce the... I can fade those out. So the colors are still there, but you can see where you're at. So again, like where we're at in Gary here, this is between Chase and... this is the area of what we call Muskrat Heaven, but between Chase and Grant, you can see all of the green parcels. So again, anything that was green, we made it green for good, I guess. So anything that's green, that's good. And then anything that we have to identify is still on there.
And one of the premises of this project, in light of everything else that was going on, was to try to make sure we had a catalog and make sure we can get from A to B and get access and equipment through all of the real estate around the river to do the work that needs to be done, and also to make this a little easier for the next group of stewards as opposed to the pile that we got. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
I think to add on that is you can see Judy's work compiled here. What a good job she did putting everything together.
Yeah. Jeff knows that there's an interesting one that... a gentleman from the Outlaw Biker Gang has an outstanding easement that we need to get, so that should be a fun one. But other than that, that was well documented in the paper. But there were some also that were there that we offered, and because of the money situation at the time, they didn't have the money, and so for whatever it was, we're at $5,000, it just went away. And so now you got to, you know, redo it because it's been sold. So,
so Jeff, there's still some red on the map, right? I guess the point of, currently is to get the red out, right? That's what we're trying to do.
Right.
How much is left off the top of your head?
I believe from what we've gone through, I believe we're probably 95% through all the files. For instance,
what's
this
five,
one...
Five, so what's 100%? What, 5% equals how many parcels?
Well, like I said, we've gone through about 850 so far. I think we've gone through all the files. Where we're at now is, like, the one that's highlighted here. It's not turning red because I turned all the colors down.
It's probably the 40 that we know, the 40 that we know, and then probably a handful that we have to true out as far as, you know, the Corps says we have it. We think we have it, but the file may not be there, so we have to go look in the auditor's office, the recorder's office.
I'm hoping it's
between 50 and 75. Yeah, 50,
I really... Yeah. And as we're going through, like today, I thought there was a parcel missing. I couldn't find record of it. I pulled up another one, and the biggest issue was like the DNR had 50 parcels. Well, they deeded them all to a little cow one time. So there's one deed. We go through with the whole deed, and we have to make sure that we indicate, you know, where
the
all
number,
these are.
Yeah,
and we're finding that a lot, especially when it happened like Gary Parks Department, Gary School City. When they gave all the easements, they did it in one document, so it may have been missed.
So you can't find that
so
number
just trying
because
to go through
it's tied into some other number.
Right.
Yeah.
But right. For the most part, there's not as many red parcels as right. I had anticipated. Okay. This is WIND Towers. That's one that needs some work. There's some easements. But that's what you'll see if there's an issue.
Would you like me to move? Well, yeah, I imagine you guys are. Are you guys doing projector or are you guys doing pop?
Big fan.
All right. Well, Tony. Tony, are you guys going to use a projector or are you guys just straight talking?
We can straight talk.
All right.
Fine. We
projector goes up.
Get the lights off much longer, you might not off.
That or that beaver starts moving around the room, you never know.
Look at him.
Somebody's evil looking figures.
So, you may introduce you or no? All right, we have Hobart.
City of Hobart. Yes, sir. Please state your name and that you're from Hobart for the man, and have at it.
Okay, my name is Phil Graylick. I'm the city engineer of Hobart. I want to thank the commission for hearing us tonight as we try to follow up to our October application, specifically the application for the Wisconsin Street and 3rd Street bridges and work that need to be done. I passed a handout out through Jody before the meeting started tonight that has a couple pages of photos and then another presentation that I'll get to talk about later. The photos are of Wisconsin Street, that top photo. The truck that you can just barely see the roof of is a deuce and a half that someone tried to drive across there. So that water is 7 to 10 feet deep over the top of Wisconsin Street. That Wisconsin Street, as our application states, is a key route for ambulance service for the northern part of Hobart, for the town of New Chicago, and the city of Lake Station. That is how they get to the hospital. So in that instant, that was not happening. The second photo down on that page is the 3rd Street Bridge. You can see where the water's falling. The bridge has been overtopped and it's failing at that point. And I want to point out to you that the 3rd Street Bridge is the second photo in the top row from the left of your board over there. That is the 3rd Street Bridge. And if this project had been done then, that bridge would not have been underwater in 2008. The second page of photos in the handout tonight is some flooding in the downtown area. You can see in that top photo, the street lights out in the water there behind where the person who took the photo was standing. This is at the end of 2nd Street. And then the bottom photo is in that same alley where you see the first car at the top in the water. Looking north toward the library, so this is the alley between Lake George and Main Street in the water there. The project that we're proposing would lower the flood elevations here 1.4 feet, so roughly 17 inches. And if you think about 17 inches and how far into the water those cars are, their tires might have been wet, but they wouldn't have been destroyed by the flood. And the buildings there would also not have been as affected by the 2008 flood. So this is a very important flood control project for the city of Hobart. Water in Lake George, as we state in our application, comes from as far away as Griffith, St. John, Crown Point, Winfield, Cherryville, Maryville, southern part of Hobart, unincorporated Lake County. It's a large watershed that comes into Deep River. The project that we've applied for came to light as part of the work SEH did in the Deep River study that Dan mentioned. That study showed us that we have an opportunity right now, a unique one that will go away, to rebuild two bridges and raise the causeway of Wisconsin Street. It is an opportunity that needs to be acted on quickly because Wisconsin Street is having structural issues, the bridges, and Lake County is going to have to rehab that bridge and replace the bridge deck. And they have pledged that money toward this project. We had been working with Commissioner Allen, but Dwayne Alverson is here tonight to answer any questions on the county's behalf. If we don't act quickly enough, the county's going to have to spend their money to rehab the bridge, and essentially this opportunity goes away at that point because we're counting on that roughly $1 million from the county as part of our application to the board. Wisconsin Street could be raised, and one of the things the study looked at was that Wisconsin Street could be done by itself, but it would have to be a 340-foot spanned bridge, and at that point Wisconsin Street alone without 3rd Street is actually more expensive than to do Wisconsin Street and 3rd Street together as one. If they're done under one DNR permit, we can take advantage of the modeling and whatnot to make Wisconsin Street closer to 200 feet in the span rather than a 340-foot bridge, and that all actually works out to be cheaper, less expensive than doing just Wisconsin Street alone. The difference is if we do both together, we get a 1.4 foot reduction in the flood surface elevation. If we do just Wisconsin Street, we get no reduction in the flood surface elevation because 3rd Street is the restriction, which is the last page of the handout that I provided to the board tonight. This is out of one of the presentations SEH did on this, and you can see the railroad bridge that the commission hired SEH to study tonight on there. That's the CFE railroad bridge approximately in the middle of the page. The next hydraulic jump, if you will, happens at the 3rd Street Bridge, where you get a rise of several feet due to the restriction in the opening there. And then Wisconsin Street is that line all the way to the right. And notice that it is not as high as the water surface profile of 2008. And so that is that 7 to 10 feet where it is underwater in that flood event. So from our application in October, we've changed the plan a little bit as we've talked to Dan, and we are investigating the possibility of the Hobart Stormwater District issuing bonds to pay for the project and then entering into an interlocal agreement with the commission and with the county to pay those bonds over a 10-year period. And in light of doing that, instead of doing the schedule that we have in our application, we're looking at doing this as one project that would reduce, we hope, the overall cost of the project and accelerate the schedule. So instead of this being a 3-year project, we believe we can get it done in 2 years. So while the railroad bridge is the big win, if you will, for reduction in the flood elevation, we can get 1.4 feet in reduction in flood elevation in 2 years with this application if we all work together as a community to make this happen. But we have to act quickly, because if we don't, this opportunity is going to go away. Wisconsin Street is already under a load restriction, and you know it's to the point where really fire trucks and garbage trucks can't cross it. It's only a matter of time before that gets worse. So it is, we're here to ask the commission for your support and join us in the county in this important project. And Mayor Snedecor is here as well, and I think he had a couple words he wanted to say, and turn it over to him.
Thank you. Thank you, Board, for hearing us. I want to say thank you for the work that you do, the work that Dan does. The tasks before you, I know, are enormous. And I go back to what the chairman said at the beginning of the meeting. This board cannot do it all. Without a regional approach, without communities coming to you with a plan where there's a concerted effort, both the communities, in this case, Lake County working with us, we know that without a plan, we can't ask this board to answer all the problems for the communities when it comes to water. Hobart, we're I guess, unfortunate in the amount of water we take in from all the other surrounding communities. And so our tasks are certainly large, too. We would just ask for your consideration on this. And time is of the essence. Certainly, if we're able to move forward on this, the work with bond counsel, with bond documents, with all the interlocal agreements, there's a lot of work to be done, and a very narrow window exists. As the engineer mentioned with Lake County and the issues with the bridge, we would just ask for your diligence in taking action on this very quickly. We understand time is of the essence. So thank you. I won't belabor this, but we just ask for your assistance in working together as a regional team effort to get this done. So thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. All right. Back to the board. Any questions with regards to this particular project?
Yes. So, thank you. Appreciate the presentation. A couple questions, but maybe one fundamental question is, when we talked about this not that long ago, I think your plan has changed since then, and sort of the bonding is a new sort of revelation to us. So if you could run through just fundamentally the cost share with the new proposal, who's offering what amount and what amount you would need from us. Has it changed? I think it feels like it's changed.
It hasn't necessarily changed. When we first started discussing this November-ish, December, we were trying to figure out, at that time we were in a cost imbalance with the Corps, We're trying to look at how much money we needed to suffice them to finish the projects, and so we were looking at different avenues to achieve funding that project, and that's where the bonding came out. I know there's subsequent questions about the length and time, 10 years, long time, 5 years, more acceptable, but if you do 5 years, then you're also amping up your payment.
Of course.
So that's where it all came from. So it's, I think, and I won't speak, I'll speak for them, I think they're just a matter of getting it done. We're trying to make sure it works within us with our all of our payments to, you know, whether it's the RDA or maintenance or everything else, so it fits well with us as well. So that was what came about. I'm sure they would gladly take a big lump sum check.
Yes, we would.
So
we would not object.
Then another technical question with respect to the program. Two questions, really. And I'll just throw them both out there because they may be related in your mind. One is, we know there are alternatives, the big win, right? We are considering, you know, studying that as well for a lot less money. And that gives us 3.5 feet or something like that. Does that eliminate the need to raise the bridges if we could do that project in the same amount of time, 2-3 years?
It would not eliminate the need for the project we're proposing, especially the Wisconsin Street Causeway, because right now that goes underwater with a 10-year storm. So that north-south route to the hospital, that system was built to flood. It is, the road was lowered to reduce the cost of the bridge at some point in the past when that was all built so that a large event goes over the top of the road but does not overtop the bridge. So that would, even with the railroad bridge, Craig, yeah, okay, just double checking, that would need to be done. 3rd Street, I believe, would still have to be done, but I'd have to go back and look through the study again. You know, the city does have obviously some concerns about the railroad bridge and some of the things that could be buried in that particular area. The brickworks from Hobart was immediately adjacent to that area, as well as an old city dump that was in there. So we're going to have to see what the study comes back with and what the options are, especially as anything that would excavate to the north of the river in that area.
Bob Fulton from the Hobart Sanitary District. One of the things I wanted to say too about the railroad bridge, that when we looked at it, there were also some concerns. One, it's an old bridge and would probably be deemed historic. That's going to complicate whatever work we want to do on it.
A bridge?
If you look at it, it's a stone arch bridge constructed about the turn of the century, and I'm sure at some point there's going to be some question as to whether, you know, it has historic value and can be messed with. And then the other thing that I'm very concerned about is everything we're hearing from NICTI about the potential rail line for the eastern leg of the South Shore going into Porter County into Valparaiso. One of the last plans that they issued used that rail line. So there may be some considerable obstacles into just going in and making the quick and efficient fix, you know, opening that up. There may be some things that will stop that, you know, or make it far more expensive. And that's why we think in terms of what we need to accomplish to protect ourselves, moving with this project is a great intermediate step and protects us, gives us some protection on the front end in case there are complications using the railroad bridge.
Thank you. Sounds like an architectural project to me. Make it 4 arches instead of 2.
Yeah.
The other question I had was regarding the level of water elevation reduction. You just said there's a deuce and a half underwater, so we're going to lower the water level 17 inches, but we got 7 feet of water.
Because Wisconsin Street dips down.
Because it's supposed to flood.
It is designed to flood. And so what we're going to do is take the 110-foot span bridge, about what's there, and we're going to expand that out to 220 feet or so, and raise the road so that the water can pass under the bridge and not go over the top of the road.
So you got a longer approach.
Yes.
The span is now twice as long. Yes. Or is it still the same? Open span is the same?
We're going to double the span.
You're going to double the span, so it'll be open 220 from abutment to abutment, and it'll all be higher for that entire 220
feet. Yeah, about a foot higher. Yep. The bridge will be about a foot higher. The road itself will be 8, 9 feet
higher. Yeah, it drops off as you get towards the end.
Yes.
It's got to tie into the existing.
And but again, if we don't do 3rd Street, that becomes a 340-foot bridge to do the exact same thing.
And what was the cost of that?
I thought it was $6.4 million.
Okay.
Does that sound right, Craig?
Yeah.
To do, so it's about a $400,000 savings to do both bridges together under one DNR permit.
Thank you. Wait, we need a permit?
Everyone you can think of.
And then some. They're thinking up the new ones, too.
You talked about time is of the essence.
Yes.
30, 45 days? Well, I mean, what are we talking here?
And why?
For us to act.
Well, we
obviously, you've got partners that are pulling together. And
right. We're
trying to get these partners all together and hopefully, you know.
Right. Once we have a commitment from the commission to do this, then we have to get the interlocal agreements the mayor mentioned in place. So those have to be drawn up. They have to be reviewed by both sides. We have to pass those. We have to get the bond council involved. We've got, you know, all these steps to get going just to get the funding in place and be able to begin, you know, the contracts to start design. Right now, like I said, Wisconsin Street has the load restriction on it because it's a girder that's cracked. If I remember right, do you want to talk about the bridge and where we're at?
And just real quick before you come up, Hobart would be the lead entity in managing the design effort. And,
yes.
Okay.
That's what we've discussed. I suppose that's always open to approvals everywhere.
Yes, sir.
My name is Dwayne Owers, and I'm a Lake County Highway Engineer, and we're responsible for the 3rd Street Bridge and the Wisconsin Street Bridge also. The Wisconsin Street Bridge right now is under load restriction, as they have indicated. A couple of the beams, they're box beams, concrete box beams, they're in a state of disrepair. They're, the steel strands in them are rusting, and they're starting to fail.
Just from the water?
Yes, they're old. It's the design of the time, and it's probably
end of life. Okay.
Yeah. Life expectancy has been met.
But at some point, the county's just going to have to take action on that and start designing the rehabilitation project so that you guys can bid that down the road somewhere. And
yeah, right now, we're usually we inspect these bridges every 2 years per federal regulations, and right now we're on a 12-month frequency with this bridge, looking at those beams, and if it continues to deteriorate, you know, what'll happen is we'll continue to lower the weight limit restrictions on that bridge, and at some point, hopefully not, you may have to close it at some point, hopefully not.
Any other questions?
Just how confident are you with your numbers as far as design and construction costs? Do you have contingency built into that?
Yes. Yeah, there are contingencies. The 25%? 20%? Do you remember? There's 20% in there. And we also hope that if we follow this plan that we've, you know, worked out now to do this as one project, we'll see some cost savings in that. But that, of course, will... we'll get more refined estimates as we go through design.
Right. You know, we spent a lot of time with regards to Deep River, even going back before the money was approved from the state, because nobody's helped y'all with that. I mean, it's just been, you know, doing whatever, and everything south just keeps getting built up, and this is part of the challenge, not only in Deep River as a part of the Little Cow watershed, but over here at Hart Ditch as well. So we're always looking at it from a holistic perspective to make sure that we help with the short-term challenges, but always keeping the long-term goals and trying to make sure things aren't going to be needing to be redone, for lack of a better term. And, you know, the a lot of the conversation after we came to Hobart that time and listened to the presentation was, this is bridge repair, and that's, you know, something that needs to be done, and they're low, and they're supposed to flood, and it's supposed to be a low area. Are we just moving the water quicker down the line? I mean, no one has been more of a champion, as Dan can tell you, going, listen, Hobart's had a lot of challenges from that, and they need to get some help. But, you know, it's a far more complicated challenge, I think, than just one or two things. And that was always a little discussion point for us in trying to make sure that the bridges are something that are going to be important, obviously, back and forth for the hospital route. But first thing out of my mouth was, well, it was supposed to flood. So the hospital route shouldn't be on a flooded bridge, right? I mean, yeah, from the region, so I mean, I have a tough time sometimes, but that didn't make any sense. But, you know, as we move through it, there's obviously an alternative route to get to the hospital, because that'll be something that has to be addressed during the construction part of this anyway. But also to make sure that we have a game plan moving forward on what happens, not just in the downtown area or just to the west, but what happens to the north as it gets into Lake Station, and then more challenging as it hits the confluence with the Little Cal, where 65 and the Borman come together. So, I mean, it's... I have a lot of adjectives, none of which I can do in a public meeting.
I think there's a couple things out of the Deep River study that SEH did that I think address that. It are, number one, the channel north of Hobart in Deep River is deep enough that this will not change any of the inundation area at all if we can get water downstream faster for the communities north of us. And the second point is that when Deep River rises, the flow from Deep River actually controls what gets into Burns Ditch. And that you can see in the flows, the river gauges, that Deep River's flow will exceed Burns Ditch's flow, which means that the difference between what's coming out of Deep River and going out of Burns Ditch, that difference is going up the Little Cal and filling up the system that you guys are commissioned to maintain.
Right.
So we're using that storage. And there's a benefit to the commission to get this water out of Hobart, through Lake Station, and out of Burns Ditch before your storm surge comes, and then we're fighting at the confluence.
Right.
So there's a huge regional benefit to doing this.
You know, and one of the things, Mr. Brick, we were also talking about is at some point, and I don't believe I'm going to make this statement, we're going to have to look to get with the federal government and look to see about extending this thing east. I mean, because now we're going to fix a whole bunch of stuff and still put it in the farmer's ditch, you know, getting out to I call it Burns Ditch out at by the Portage Marina, but therein lies part of that challenge as well. So we're always trying to think about that too, because everybody's going to still keep building and still keep paving and still keep moving the water, and we want to make sure that there's a game plan for handling that as well. So that, you know, we're going to try to do the best that we can to be timely, since it is of the essence, but some of those things need to be checked off to make sure we're going to be able to do this. We spent a lot of time in our work study talking about this particular project, and, you know, I think we're comfortable in moving forward to assist with regards to this. The specifics are still a little bit something that we're going to have to work through a couple of items, if that makes sense. Try to be politically correct while still being positive. How's that?
Pretty good for you.
Pretty good for me, isn't it? And no cussing.
For an IU boy.
I wasn't at that June, the long meeting in June. I just wanted to ask a question about something you just said. So you said, even though I'm a civil engineer, so mm-hmm. Q equals VA, even though you're putting more water through faster,
yep.
You're saying the inundation area and Lake Station doesn't change. So
correct, because it's very channelized. So, you know, I don't know, Craig, if you want to talk to that or not, but basically what they found was the height of the embankments of the river can take this flow through it without actually spreading it further out and inundating any structures or any additional floodplains beyond what's already there.
Okay, and I was just going to say, and I assume part of the equation is just that it's complicated, and that in the study, some of it is going to push it back, maybe more back towards, you know, Burns and back into Little Cal. So maybe that, and we, it's wide. We have a lot of storage mm-hmm. in the Gary area, so maybe that's part of the equation. I mean, it's not linear. I understand that.
It's not. And I think in my mind, what I took away from the study is that if this water can get out of the Burns Ditch system, get out of Deep River down Burns Ditch before the peak comes down the Little Cal, we can reduce the backflow up the Little Cal,
okay.
which gives you storage back.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions for these gentlemen?
I have one question. In your plan, did you mention, do you have anything regarding to the economic impact of these two bridges up there erected? Just curious.
I don't know.
What do you mean?
Anything on economic? Yeah. I mean, the Third Street one is obviously in the downtown, and we're, you know, doing our best to revitalize that and attract businesses to the downtown.
That's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm asking, my friend. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay.
Tom?
Yeah, there are recreational benefits planned on both of these bridges as well.
And by raising this bridge and the levee construction that was necessary or one of the proposed ideas, that doesn't come into play here if you increase the flow of the downstream. I think that there was, I know that there's a mention on the in the SEH study on page 15 about this levee.
Okay, I believe that's a lower area in Lake Station. That's a lower area that's not actually shown in the FEMA maps, but is inundated in the model. It does not change due to this project. That area would be inundated with or without the project, so I think the levee would still be necessary.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen. That was outstanding. Heavy going. Are we getting a check?
Can't do any better introductions.
Oh, I didn't even hear it. Sorry.
Which was the best.
He didn't do it.
Which is the best I could do.
Best for last, Winfield.
This is the town of Winfield.
Good evening, and thank you again for hearing us tonight. My name is Jim Simmons. I'm from the town of Winfield. I'm a town councilman. I'm also our representative for the advisory board. I'm here with Tim Clayton, who's also a town councilman and stormwater board member of our town. And Tony Kenning is passing out the flyers. He's the brains of the trio tonight. So save all the technical questions. I'm an electrician. So anyway, town of Winfield, for you guys that don't know where we're at, we're about 3 miles east of I-65, around 109th, that's through ours. So we're a 22-year young town. So we've inherited a lot of problems that were there before we became a town. We're trying to deal with them as best we can. DLZ is our town engineer. We developed the stormwater manual back in 2008. It has a couple dozen items in it. As a small town with less than 1,000 parcels, it takes us a while to build up a stormwater money bank. We've been addressing things on an as-needed basis for the last, since the stormwater manual. We have clicked out a couple of them, but our number one priority is Hidden Creek in the north part of our town, and that's what you have pictures of. The total cost that was estimated in 2008 to do everything that's needed for that project is a little over $2 million. We've been taking it in little baby steps. Last year, with the commission's help and Dan's help, we were able to clean out the creek and clear all the debris and trees and everything. This year, we're hoping to go a little bit further and create some upstream storage off of that creek. And although the pictures of the houses are not by the Little Calumet River, some of them would make you think it is for that little creek and what it did to some of those homes in there. It doesn't mimic the pictures you have over there for the flood of 2008, but it's in some cases pretty close. The job, the application in front of us, we're trying to create, like I said, some upstream storage. As Hobart mentioned, we flow into Hobart up there eventually. Probably don't put them a whole lot up there, but we do contribute to that area. This avenue of concern here also borders Maryville, so our upstream storage would actually be a multi-benefit to a couple communities there if we can get this done. That's about all I have. Like I said, we're a young community. We might as well be a 22-month-old baby. We've crawled, now we're starting to walk on our own. We're handling maintenance issues ourselves. We were able to buy a back truck here recently from another community used, so we can start doing some of our own maintenance. Like I said, we're trying. With that, I'm going to give it to Tony Kinney because he has the brains here.
Well, real briefly, I guess, to go over the project, a little bit of history. The flooding in Hidden Creek has been ongoing for quite some time. The Hidden Creek subdivision was developed prior to the town of Winfield's existence. Back when drainage standards were different and things weren't looked at quite in detail as they are looked at today. This project alleviates flooding for about 19 properties specifically in the town of Winfield. On the first page, there's the plat map that identifies the parcels that we feel are significantly affected and improved upon with the Green Star. The flooding from Hidden Creek floods 101st Avenue. It overtops frequently, as well as Clay Street and the Maryville side. So you've got a couple collector streets there for basically the north side of Winfield that are impacted by this flooding. The project is going to entail an increase in stormwater detention by about four times the volume that's out there right now. There is a detention pond, as shown on the left side of that yellow outlined area on the first page. It's proposed that pond be increased by a volume of four times with improved outlets and so forth over to the Deep River tributary. On the second page, it gives you an aerial view, just some photographic evidence as well of some of the street closures. The first photograph up on the top left, taken back on March of 2009. Now, this kind of shows you how long this has been going on, and it's been in Winfield's eyes. That was from a 1.1-inch rain. So it doesn't take a lot. A 1.1-inch rain really isn't a significant event for that street to flood. The detention down to the lower right, you'll see at one stage thereafter a 3.1-inch rainfall back on January 8th of 2008. The road gets a little bit higher from my understanding. It just happened to be I was out there to take the photo at that particular moment in time. The pond overtopping, which you see off to the left there, that's the location of the detention basin. It's obviously undersized. You can see it's overtopping. It overtops quite frequently. And when it's in this state right here, down to the lower left, you see a photograph of a mailbox and a cul-de-sac down on 104th Avenue that's inundated at that time. The third page here is identifying just some representative photographs. While many of the houses there don't get water in them directly, there are several that do. And you can see one of the bedrooms there with a bed in it and some other photographs pertaining to that particular property at 4360 104th Avenue. Off to the right is another property that has significant flooding within the house itself, and that's at 4675 101st Avenue. So although it's a widespread problem within that subdivision, and something that Winfield is hoping to rectify here shortly. The fourth and final page is a graphic representation. These were actually photographs provided to me by one of the residents out there on 104th Avenue. Overlaid on a Google Earth image, you can kind of see the magnitude of the flooding that occurs back into the subdivision, transformers underwater and so forth. And again, it's a repeat of the same mailbox setup that you see there. But I thought that gave a pretty good indication of how serious that is to that subdivision. At Winfield's application, they're seeking to start this project out with the engineering and design. There's some permitting that's involved. There's a little bit of hydraulic modeling and some other alternatives to try to bring the cost down. But as Jim indicated, right now the overall construction cost is estimated somewhere around $2 million or a little bit above. And that was a 2008 number. So, with that, I'd like to open it up to any questions for myself or Jim.
Any questions on this? So you're saying the overall cost of the project, is that outside of just the expanded ponding area? What else is going on? I mean, this almost looks like it's the head for the creek to start to go down in a deep river.
It's up at the headwaters, that's correct. There's about a little bit over a square mile of drainage area at this point in time. So it's obviously it's very small compared to the thousands of acres that go to Deep River ultimately. But it is at the headwaters.
There's a start to everything, right?
Exactly. The cost includes construction. There's a lot of earthwork volume. There's a lot of cost in a 48-inch or 36-inch pipe outfall. There's some culvert work and then some ditch maintenance or clearing and channel work.
Is there property acquisition in that number too, or has that already been taken care of?
The acquisition has not been taken care of at this point in time.
Is that in the number?
That is not in the number.
So, and then the water coming into this subdivision, I'm sorry, what Hidden Creek? Is there water that comes into this part of the community, or is this basically the start of the stormwater?
There's a subdivision to the south called the Trees Subdivision that extends all the way down to 109th Avenue, and then further about a half a mile or so to the south of 109th Avenue is essentially the watershed start, the headwater. So that all comes, so there's probably a good linear length of about a mile of watershed to the south that flows into this.
As you mentioned in the beginning, I don't know if it was you or the previous gentleman, is this result of prior mistakes in planning of the area and the amount of water that was going to be required to be stored as a result of this being by this creek?
Yeah, this subdivision was developed in the late 1980s, my understanding, and probably completed somewhere in the 90s. The drainage standards that are in place now in many communities have gone a serious evolution through the 1990s. Detention volumes, ways to calculate those, are a lot more strict now than they are back then. One of the things that Winfield has enacted, as well as Lake County and some of the other communities, depressional storage or depressions in farmers' fields and so forth used to be ignored. Now we have to account for those. The fact that they were ignored meant higher potential release rates when things got developed and so forth. So I don't want to say it's necessarily mistakes that have happened. It's more or less the evolution of how the engineering calculations have progressed over the years.
Mm-hmm. I have a few.
Go ahead. You go.
You indicate you're going to increase detention by fourfold. Mm-hmm. From what to what? From how many acre feet to how many acre feet?
Unfortunately, sitting in the audience today, I was thinking that question might happen, and I don't know that number offhand. I want to say that we're probably looking from somewhere under 10 to somewhere around 40, but that's the last time we've truly studied and ran the numbers on this was back in 2008 for this, and I apologize. I mean, we've...
And then, it's okay. You can get back to us or whatever, and then... has there been hydrology study done to determine that these people are definitely going to be removed?
Yes.
Flooded?
Right. We developed a computer model of the system that basically takes the hydrology, inputs it into the creek system. There were cross sections and culverts and pipes and storm sewer systems that were put into this model, and it simulates, basically we can simulate any type of design rainfall event that...
HECRES?
I'm sorry.
HECRES?
We used a program called SWIM.
Okay.
So it's a predecessor of... it's a more developed version of the EPA's SWIM program. Okay.
And then, did I understand you said about $2 million?
Yes.
So you're talking about $100,000 a parcel to alleviate flooding for 19 parcels. I'm going to spend $2 million bucks.
or someone's going to spend, it's $100,000 per parcel.
Well, there's also, I mean, if you look at it that way, you can calculate it that way as well. But there's also the 101st Avenue and then Clay Street that's over top here.
I understand. So,
Tony, big picture, Jim, I think earlier said, well, a couple things. One, an improved outlet would increase flow to Deep River a little bit, right?
Well, there's going to be more detention as well that's placed up there.
Okay, so what's the issue with the, basically, just to get it, hold it, and then let it out? Or
hold it and let it out.
Are you talking about damming or some sort of control?
Well, there would be a control structure that's built in the pond itself, correct.
Okay. And then sort of I was thinking of the same question, I think a similar question to Tom's. Holistically for the town of Winfield, if this is $2 million, and I think Jim had said that you've been, you know, looking at water problems holistically, this is your top priority. How many others are there? I mean, what's the sense of how big is the problem of flooding in Winfield, you know, such that... I guess short story is, are you guys going to come back every year with a $2 million project, and is it going to be 50 of those before we're done? I mean,
no, and I mean, I've got a sheet here that outlined the top 10. I think, you know, if we're looking at $2 million, I think the next one down was $300,000 or less, and those are culvert replacements or pipe replacement pieces. This is the largest regional, what I call regional on
impact,
a scale
right,
field
right.
Impact. So yeah, that, you know, you jump from this amount to the other projects are a lot smaller in nature.
Okay, because I mean, I think where Tom Wichlinski was getting to, and I have a similar thought, is that, yeah, engineering calculations, I mean, the fundamental calculations haven't changed. The sophistication of modeling, of course, has changed. I think some of the issues, some of the concerns I think that we have, we talk about South County development, we just keep gobbling up, you know, green space and putting more concrete down, and short stories, that just makes water flow faster. And then if you don't handle how it gets out, something gets missed, developer sells lots, they're gone, and then you have these types of issues. And, you know, Lake County's a big county, and we've always said we wanted to be prudent with the money that we've got since we got it. So it's just challenging to think about, you know, all of the potential problems that are out there.
One of the things the town has adopted many years ago, back in the early 2000s, very, very strict release rates. We're looking at essentially 0.13 cubic feet per second per acre of developed land. So if you look at, you know, what's coming off of there now, maybe you've got a cubic foot per second where, you know, what they're requiring is a fraction.
Right.
A fraction of that peak release.
When was that at?
I would say early 2000s it was. And then the town also revamped the ordinances here in the past year to even make a little bit more stricter requirements with respect to how you treat existing compressional storage or lowlands, you know, such that you're not... you're improving the situation there as well. So,
okay. Thanks.
I had a question. You were one of the first communities to start coming in and filling out these applications. And it was my recollection that we did one project in Winfield already. Was that at 101st? Is that the same street here? Is it the same location?
It's the same location. That creek had been overgrown for many, many years. And Jim, maybe you can attest or talk a little bit about how that went.
The same creek?
Same creek. It's okay. Creek.
The $2 million job has a lot of components to it. One of them, the very first step we had to do was clean this thing up and get this creek under some type of control where we could start to manage it and take care of the maintenance ourselves. We're a one-stoplight town, literally. So we did that, and like I said, with Dan's help, they came by last year. We took care of it, got all that cleaned out and everything. Now the next step, like I said, we can't take on a $2 million project all at one time. So we're doing it in logical bites. And so, yes, you did help us last year with that part of the creek. Like I said, this is our next step. And like Tony said, this is, any 10 of our other projects don't equal this project. We've been doing things with the money we've been getting off of parcels, like I said, our parcel fees, and we've been replacing culverts, taking care of some flooding at Arizona and Randolph on our own, spending, doing $70,000, $80,000 projects at a time out of our own money. You know, but like I said, that to get this component started and get this, we just came to the board for
$2 million is the whole project cost, estimated cost. I know it's early.
Outstanding. Any other questions?
One question I had. You mentioned, Tony, you mentioned earlier about, or maybe it was Jim, regarding some of the components associated with the $2 million. You mentioned construction, 36 to 48 inch outfall. Anything else? What did you have pre-existing equipment material-wise at the first construction? Where the creek is at now in terms of equipment? Or in material, equipment, what currently exists there, I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah, there's a, it's kind of hard to see on the aerials there, but there's an existing detention basin. If you look at page one, one of the things that I don't like to see happen now, and the new standards don't really allow for, if you have a fairly significant creek, you don't put inline detention. That's what I don't like to see that happen, because there's a whole myriad of problems that could arise if it's not done correctly. There's a detention basin that takes up probably about the equivalent of two parcels of Hidden Creek land. I think they're acre lots out there generally. So there's about a 2-acre parcel of the pond there. It's not very deep, but the channel flows right through it. There's a berm that was constructed across the top of it, and then an outlet culvert. I don't remember the size of that at this point in time.
Okay.
And it flows into a ditch that's not within any easement on the Marable side. It's that kind of curled shape that goes between 101st and Clay. You see it on the aerial there with the trees. That's so overgrown. But again, that's on the Marable side as well. What this project will do is it will hopefully bring back all of that work to the Winfield side by providing a new outlet to the creek. I mean, ultimately, the creeks join forces pretty close. It's actually on the upper right-hand corner of that map there, where the creek out of Hidden Creek joins the main tributary of Deep Run out there. So that's really the infrastructure that's out there. It's nothing, a couple culverts under 101st and 100 and the other cul-de-sacs that are down.
Okay. All right.
There's a significant amount of earthwork and excavation, and if bids come in right, I mean, earthwork can fluctuate so much from removing it at $4 a cubic yard all the way up to $20 a cubic yard, depending upon the time, the place, the contractor's bidding, where can they dispose of it, and so forth. I mean, there's a good chance that $2 million we're hoping can come down, but right now, worst case scenario, we're looking at $2 million.
It seems to be a substantially large amount going toward just the removal of the entire earthwork associated with it in order to get to the four times amount that you're talking about. Okay.
The property here that's showing, I guess, probably to the east of this subdivision that looks occupied but by homes. Is this something that's proposed, or is this occupied with improved at this point?
No, it started construction years ago, and the developer stopped it. I'm not quite sure why it was platted. He started to do some work. And it's been sitting. It's actually a cornfield right now, and it has been for the last about 3 years.
Any other questions? Outstanding. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Does everybody have the ask on this thing? Is it the full 2 million?
Final question. What is the ask? Is it the whole amount?
No. It's to get the process going with the engineering and permitting.
188, I think I remember.
So engineering can't be more than 10 or 15% of that. So 200, 300.
181.6.
125.6. I thought
it's. Was it 80% of the 27,000? Sorry.
Okay, that sounds right.
Thank you.
This is this application.
Here, do you have the right one, or you got this?
Mr. Ipe, is there another presentation?
We've got three more. I'm kidding.
No more presentations.
Miss Natalie, how things are going with the Army Corps of Engineers? If you have a couple of seconds to enlighten us, that would be outstanding.
Seconds. Good evening, Natalie Mills with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Just pleased to report, as Dan indicated, that we do have we've reached a positive cost share balance based on the hard work and dedication with the commission and the consultant that you guys employ, Dawson Associates. So our plan is to move forward with Hobart Marsh mitigation as well as the work at Hammond Tieback. The plan is to award a contract in 2016. That was the request made, and we do believe that we can make an award this fiscal year. So that's certainly the goal that we're going to be striving for. We're going to be working with Dan hand in hand and ensuring that we meet the goals and objectives of the project together moving forward.
Fiscal year ends September 30th, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So an award, but not necessarily, you know, any completion. That's it.
Any questions for Natalie? Excellent. Happy New Year. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other issues, new business, Mr. Wicklund?
Nothing.
Mrs. Long?
Nothing.
Mr. Wyszlinski?
I'm good.
Mr. Gazdecki?
Nothing, thank you.
Mr. Brodnix?
Nothing to add.
Mr. Castellanos?
Yes, I'd just like to make a mention to the passing of Commissioner Roosevelt Allen. He was a great friend and a great contributor to the Little Calumet River Basin Commission, and I hope everybody remembers him. He has his funeral that's going to be this Saturday at St. Timothy's Church at 11 a.m., and I consider all the projects that are being presented. And he's been a great supporter of the county and a lot of projects. They're hoping that maybe one of these days that a bridge or a road would be named after him for all the work that he's done for us. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. May you rest in peace. Mr. Whitaker.
None.
All right. Favorite part of the program, statements to the board from the floor to help us move this thing along. If you'd like to address the board, please stand up to the podium, state your name and address for the man, and let's go.
I'm Ruth Morris from Hammond, Indiana on Southmore Road. And speaking of all the flows and the retention, the question, was the Thornton Quarry used to relieve any of the westward flow after the large Christmas heavy rains?
Outstanding question. Mr. Repay, is that an Army Corps of Engineer question? It looks like it is.
Thank you, Ruth, for the question. Again, Natalie Mills with the Army Corps of Engineers. I don't have the answer, but I do have the contact that I can take the question back to, and then I can have your email address. I can respond to you via email.
Okay.
And I'll include that in the response as well.
Great. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Ruth, did you have a name for the beaver?
Georgia.
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 Yes, sir.
Good evening. My name is Eric Sprennett, 3118 Worth Road, Highland, and board member of Northwest Indiana Paddling Association, as you may remember. Mr. Baker, I appreciate your comments on the possibility of recreational improvements specifically for canoe launches on the river. I would caution, however, that this is not a minor add-on thing, because one of the things that needs to be considered is parking for vehicles fairly close to the river, and that costs money. So if you guys have already allocated a sum for paving the trail, that probably won't pay for much. Prime example of that is the Army Corps originally built at Oxbow Park what they call a canoe launch. It's about half a mile from a parking area. I invite somebody to come, I'll provide the canoe, and let's try and schlep it half a mile to the river. It doesn't work very well. So please consider the holistic approach of providing canoe launches, but thank you for your comment. And to our Hobart friends, I also extend a thanks for your considerations of paddling improvements to Deep River and Lake George. Thank you.
Mr. Repay.
The best example of where he can utilize that launch would be the one where the sandbar modification is going. Oh. You can park behind the Wendy's, which is actually the Visitors Convention Bureau, and walk right over the top of that levee, and you can the ramp will be right there.
It'll be a ramp? I mean, you know, I mean, it's a good point because, I mean, as far as places to put that, you know, to park and to be able to go in there, because you really want to go east towards Gary because that's where the...
Plenty of parking.
Yeah.
And it'll be a ramp big enough for our large equipment, and it'll be graded right into the water. So it should be working.
I certainly appreciate that consideration, but in the write-up that I provided to the... to the board, to the west of Kennedy, it's often too shallow. And since you guys aren't removing any dirt or silt that has accumulated east of Kennedy in summertime low water conditions, it's impassable.
In this area, we re-channelized it, but feel free to give us a better location.
10-4. Anybody else have anything? Okay. First and foremost, thank you very much for coming out. Thanks for spending the time and making these presentations and helping us make sure something like that is a very, very distant memory. But it will never be as long as I draw a breath. I will also say that our next meeting is February 10th. Thank you very much. Calling it.